Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. Today's episode of Gold Star Classroom is being recorded at ET's in Lambertville, Michigan. Let me introduce today's class. On my right is actor and fight choreographer, Matt Tyson. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Jerry. Thank you.
Welcome to class.
Thank you.
On my left is Army veteran and aspiring comedian, Jeff Fry.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Living the American dream.
I can see that. And sitting across from me at the in the classroom at the table is education major from the University of Toledo, Jeff Miller.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I am, as always, your host and teacher, Professor Jerry Jaffe. I will be asking the students some general knowledge quiz questions from across the entire expanse of human knowledge, and then I will be grading your answers, because that's what teachers do, is grade you. Are you ready?
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Well, I certainly hope so, because I have high expectations for all my students, and I'm currently getting low expectation vibes from all three of you. All right, our first topic addresses an urban legend, but it may be one that you have not heard before, or maybe you have. In the country of Korea, there is a fear that this will kill you. Any thoughts what the this is? I'll give you a little bit of a
Kim Jong-un.
That is a frightening a legend. I don't know if we can call it urban. As a clue, this is a common household appliance.
I think it might be a broom.
Are Koreans afraid of brooms? What do you think, Matt?
I was going to say kimchi, so I'm not really sure. That doesn't qualify as an appliance.
Well, kimchi kills non-Koreans,
okay.
But Koreans love the stuff.
I'm going to say clocks.
That is a ticking sound that we hear behind you, but I will give you another clue. This item is associated with hot days.
Air conditioners?
You're very close, Matt.
Very close. Okay.
Think like the second world country where they don't have many air conditioners.
Box fans.
Electric fans.
Electric fans.
Korean, you get a gold star for a correct answer.
Yes, that's my only fan in comedy, by the way.
The one you keep in the box?
Yes.
And then have to plug in.
Yes.
This is a common urban legend in Korea that electric fans on hot days in closed rooms will cause asphyxiation. Almost every year, newspaper articles will pop up of people who have died during the night, and they will always say things like, and this is from an actual newspaper article, a man reportedly died on Monday morning after sleeping with an electric fan running. What?
Is that David Carradine's obituary?
I think the problem there is he didn't have a fan with him in the closet. This misconception is, in fact, repeated by the Korean government. There are actually warnings from the government to be careful when you use fans in the summer. What do you think, Jeff?
I think the United States military should just take a bunch of box fans
from
Korea.
Unfortunately, in North Korea, they don't have anything to plug them into. So they could drop them out of airplanes,
yeah,
perhaps.
With generators.
In the 70s in South Korea, there were great power shortages. So it is surmised that the government repeated this rumor as a way to get people to not use their fans and conserve energy.
So People magazine in Korea put this out.
Apparently, just recently, partially because of the internet, that urban legend is finally starting to disappear amongst young people in Korea. But until as recently as the 2000 and aughts, this was a commonly held belief that electric fans might kill you.
So they're getting electric fans now. Made in China.
Maybe they should.
Good for the economy.
Tell the young people the internet will kill them.
Yes.
Keep them off.
That would keep them off the internet and absolutely off the fans. How could an electric fan kill somebody? We have dropping it from an airplane onto somebody's head. Asphyxiation. Any other theories?
Sticking someone's head in the fan.
That takes us back to Kim Jong-un. Yeah. Sticking your head in a fan.
Oh, yeah, think of a number of extremities. Actually, you wouldn't want to call it a fan.
That's that noise. Well, I will say another theory was that it somehow created hypothermia, that the cool air blowing on your body would lower your body temperature to a dangerous, unstable level.
That would have to be one large fan.
Yeah, which, while ironically, it's usually like small box fans that people have in their small apartments, the kind of things that, you know, not rich people would buy, not anything fancy or extensive.
That's why you never see an overweight person in Korea, is that right?
Because the whole country's one giant sauna?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And because of the kimchi.
I was going to say, I think it has something to do with the kimchi.
Yes.
That was my dog's name.
Okay. Kimchi. Oh, so did you eat kimchi?
No. No.
If you do,
once,
make sure you add a lot of garlic and spice. That's prerequisite for seasoning your kimchi.
I mean, it was weird.
Well, after that discussion on the urban legend of electric fans killing people in Korea, we've come to our first set of grades. Matt, I have to congratulate you. Oh, you do have the highest F in the class right now.
That's that liberal arts education.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Someday, Jeff Miller, when you graduate, you too will be able to get high Fs in the Gold Star classroom.
If I graduate.
First you have to get through this class.
Oh, that's not looking so good right now, is it?
I just like to know what their opinion is on ceiling fans.
After Apocalypse Now, they're terrified of ceiling fans. We're going to turn our attention to science and evolutionary biology. There is a very interesting fringe theory. I'm going to tell you the very basic version of this hypothesis, and then you will tell me what you think it's all about. When some evolutionary biologists look at the humans and look at other great apes, they notice some obvious superficial differences. Any of them spring to mind? What are some of the obvious superficial differences between humans and other great apes? There's three or four sort of obvious ones that would be in any science textbook.
Great apes or grape ape?
Great.
Hair?
Hair, yes. We are hairless. Our relatively hairless compared to the
some
other
us,
great
yes,
apes. Yes. We're not so sure about Jeff over here.
Yes.
He's showing his ancestry in that sleeveless shirt. So relative hairlessness. Sometimes humans are called the naked ape.
Strength,
not a giant difference, although some of the great apes show great ferocity. But I don't know that it's a humongous unbalance. It's certainly not one of the common things often listed. Anything else come to mind?
About intelligence.
Intelligence, to a certain degree.
The apes are smarter.
Whether you're on the east side of Toledo.
Not only just sort of a relative intelligence as in tool making or culture making, but speaking just of anatomy and physiology, our brain-head ratio is bigger. And that is a...
In more ways than one.
And always but one. Any of these other common differences that you can think of? One, Jeff on my left, Jeff Fry, is also, not only is he challenging with his hairy arms, but is also challenging with his speech. We speak. And they do not speak. Well, these few examples and some others we could list, but to move it forward, all have led a small fringe group of evolutionary biologists to come up with this hypothesis. Are there any other set of mammals that you can think of that are largely hairless have some version, not quite of speech, but really it's breath control that makes speech possible, have large brains relative to their body size.
Dolphins, whales.
Dolphins and whales.
Nice.
See, we got to speak up, Jeff. He who hesitates gets bad grades.
I see.
Whereas Matt gets another gold star.
I was thinking Brown professional wrestling. That's just me.
Well, professional wrestlers wax and have big heads, but I don't know if they have big brains inside their heads.
I think cannibalism is an accepted practice with the great apes, too, whereas we kind of tend to frown on that, too. But
This theory is called the aquatic ape hypothesis.
What about laws?
What about laws?
Yeah.
Well, laws and art and culture and society are all cultural developments, whereas the aquatic ape hypothesis is all about physiology. So, like...
Wait, tell us mermaids are real or anything, right?
Do you wish mermaids were real?
Yeah.
Is that your guess? Is that your official answer?
Hot. I don't know.
Kim Basinger was hot, too, in her day.
Daryl Hannah?
Whichever. They're blonde.
We often think that our ape-like ancestors came out of the trees and lived on the savannah, but it is suggested by the aquatic ape hypothesis that our ancestors came out of the trees and lived in or near water, and that spending a lot of time in water, like many generations, has caused these numerous changes, such as breath control, being naked, even the swimming skills that humans have, being streamlined to move through water in a way that most mammals, land mammals, are not. What do you think about the aquatic ape hypothesis? Yes,
so
no,
they're
maybe?
All in Savannah, Georgia. And
yes.
I just picture prostitutes with bad breath and naked.
It doesn't address the issue of how all our ancestors got to Savannah, Georgia.
Oh.
Speaking of Savannah.
Speaking of Savannah.
Soon to relocate.
That is student Matt Tyson's new home, yes. Savannah, Georgia.
So. I'm stupid. I don't know. Yeah. I just don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't.
Well, we're here to teach you. Are you teachable?
I don't know.
Well, I think the thing I said about the mermaid, I don't know if you caught this on the Animal Planet.
Oh, yes.
A couple of weeks ago, mermaids, the undiscovered evidence.
Right.
Right, that was the aquatic ape theory.
Well,
the faked footage.
Yeah, the mermaid documentary was supposed to be like an Orson Welles fake documentary.
Yes. Yeah.
But people didn't realize it was a fake documentary. So for like a month, there were people wandering around going, did you see that documentary? There's really mermaids.
Yes. Well, I was one of those people. So maybe we could just drop that. I feel bad enough about it already.
And these are the people below the apes, right?
The most mainstream biologists do not accept the aquatic ape hypothesis. Do you see any flaws with the aquatic ape hypothesis?
This doesn't hold water.
It doesn't hold water?
Makes me think about the things they used to sell in the back of comic books. The sea monkeys?
Oh, sea monkeys.
Sea monkeys,
yeah.
Yes. Yep. We could definitely do some scientific studies.
Or something.
Yes.
That's very disappointing.
Yes. How do they explain things like nipples? That's one thing I've never got.
Well, evolutionary biologists always try to explain things in terms of how they will help you survive. So the question is, do nipples help us survive? And one of the things that happens is, like your appendix, is things might have had a use to our ancestors, but might not have a use.
Well, I'm very pro-nipple. So.
Yes.
Nipples help us survive at a bad concert.
Yes. There would definitely be no point to the Mardi Gras without nipples. That's right out. Men have nipples because women have nipples, and women need nipples to feed their offspring. And because we all come from the same embryonic material, men develop useless nipples.
It would just look weird if we didn't have nipples as well.
Just be a blank chalkboard. Our Jeff's would be a hairy chalkboard.
Yeah.
But either way, it would not be pleasant.
Nope.
All right, here's your bonus question. This idea in the fringe elements of biology is called the aquatic ape hypothesis. For the students at home, can you earn bonus points by explaining the difference between a hypothesis and a theory? Jeff, you're a future educator.
You're going to need to be able to explain
this
to
this kind of stuff, right?
To an 8-year-old someday.
Well, hypothesis. I really haven't a clue, and I ought to.
Okay.
Hopefully you will teach me the ways, Mr. Jerry.
Well, I will teach you, but can you learn?
As Jeff over here to my right says, I don't know. Theory. Yes. Okay, we'll start with hypothesis. I guess that's kind of, I don't know, I got a question or an idea. I think that that Matt should be called Jeff because this and this and this. I don't know. Maybe, such a good idea.
You're groping in the dark, which strikes me as
not a Lake Erie College student.
Might be.
It strikes me as an activity you're familiar with.
Groping in the dark. Isn't that a Ben Roethlisberger?
Yeah, that's right.
I just want to make sure.
But you're not all the way there. Thing. Matt, yes. Or Harry Jeff, any thoughts about the difference between hypothesis and theory?
I can answer, but I'm afraid I'll be ridiculed for getting another.
You will definitely be ridiculed.
Okay. So I'm going to let Jeff take a shot.
I think theory is what... I have no clue. They're spelled different.
They are spelled different. You get 1 point.
They both have a Y.
I will give you 2 points if you can spell hypothesis.
H-Y-P-O-T-H-I-S-I-S. I-P-P-I.
A good teacher never
theory
calls
is something
their students
that's,
wrong,
you know,
but you were
you think
wrong.
Something up, you write it down. No, wait. Yeah.
No.
No.
Wrong. But you are channeling, though, the common everyday use of the word theory in everyday conversation. No, this is a cause of great problems that it's not. People often use the word theory as if it meant guess or idea, but in science, that's not what the word theory means. Matt, can you help us out?
I will try to help. I believe hypothesis is takes place at the beginning of the scientific method. It is an untested, he's taking notes, untested observation.
Jeff, our students are not allowed to consult their phone during class.
Whereas,
minus 10 points.
The theory is the conclusion the scientist arrives at the end of conducting the experiment.
Well, hypothesis is part of the scientific method.
Yes.
It is the testable proposition.
Right.
So hypothesis is usually a little bit more specific. And it's uncertain. It waits to be tested or retested by further testing.
Yes. Or Stanislavski would say the magic if.
It could be construed as the magic if.
Magic if.
But a theory in scientific vernacular is a large proven explanation for a large scale phenomenon like germ theory, evolutionary theory, theory of gravity. So a theory has to explain a lot and has to have been well tested before the bulk of the scientific community would use the word theory to describe it.
So a hypothesis is a prostitute and theory is an escort?
Well, hypothesis is who pays, and an escort is Jeff, what's an escort again? You look like you would know.
I think that's the car my parents gave me.
Well, that explains your beard. All right. Well, after that much-needed review of both the aquatic ape hypothesis and evolutionary theory in general, our grades are devolving rather than evolving. At this rate,
I think I'm doing good.
The golden banana is going to go to an actual ape as opposed to one of the students.
You're walking out of here on all fours.
So let's move to a different area, the area of popular culture. It is common type of horror film, such as King Kong or the classic Tarantula about the giant tarantula, that if you take something and enlarge it to humongous proportions, it should be scary. Of course, we can probably think of examples such as the comedy Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, where you take something and make it gigantic and it turns out to be ridiculous rather than scary.
Is that actually supposed to be funny, that movie?
Well, they were attempting at humor, yes. Although it might have been scary at how bad it was.
So how does every John Holmes movie work?
That's more of a nightmare than a horror film. Yeah. Well, I have in my lesson plan a list of horror movies, and these are not comedy horror or comedies. These are movies that are attempting to be scary by creating giant monsters that turned out to be more ridiculous than scary. I'm going to tell you the name of the movie, Can you tell me the name of the giant thing in the movie? We will start with a 1957 black and white classic called Beginning of the End.
Godzilla.
No, but I will tell you about Godzilla. I will, first of all, bonus points for who can tell me the year the original Godzilla movie came out. Before anyone at this table was born, certainly.
54?
A gold star for Matt, 1954. You got three gold stars. But bonus points for someone who can tell me what Godzilla is actually supposed to be.
A lizard.
Okay. Wrong. Although, as the movies...
Roseanne Barr.
Roseanne Barr, maybe. As the
Komodo Dragon.
Partially inspired by Komodo Dragon, as the movies progressed over the decades, he became increasingly reptilian. But how about, can you imagine the original 1954 Godzilla? I'm making faces right now, by the way. I am demonstrating what the original Godzilla looked like. It was not particularly reptilian, although it did have a tail. It did come out of the ocean. I will give you a bad hint. Godzilla is, of course, what we call him in American English. His Japanese name is Gojira. And Gojira refers to two animals that he is supposed to be like a monstrous combination of. Anyone remember or know what animals the original Godzilla is supposed to be based
Gila,
on?
Gila monster?
It's nothing reptilian.
Nothing reptilian, okay.
A sea monkey and a whale.
A whale is one of the things it's based on. Well Chronic done, Jeff.
Nice, nice.
And ape is the other thing.
Oh, back to the aquatic.
You each get half of those are correct.
Connection.
Goji in Gojira refers to gorillas, and Jira refers to whales. So it is a giant gorilla whale is what the original Godzilla was supposed
I
to be.
I think less of that movie now.
I've ruined the magic for you. Well, you asked about Gojira. You brought him up first. Another example of a Japanese giant monster that was not particularly scary would be Mothra.
Giant moth.
Butterfly.
Giant moth.
Yep.
But who knows what, I'll give you one more Japanese example. Gamera was supposed to be.
Turtle?
Giant turtle.
Yes.
That's my list of Japanese giant monsters, which brings us back to the beginning of the end. What everyday creature was enlarged in an attempt to be scary in the 1957 Beginning of the End? Anyone know or seen it or have
ants.
Any guess? Not ants. Them, of course, is a famous movie on the same theme. And a less good movie from the 70s is Empire of the Ants. So there have been several cases of ants being made gigantic. How about Beginning of the End featured giant grasshoppers?
I think you're making that one up.
If you like that one, how about 1955's It Came from the Sea?
That was an octopus?
Godzilla.
Squid. Not Godzilla. Although I would love to see Godzilla fight a giant squid. Now that would be a good movie.
Kind of a Toby movie.
Is it?
Yes.
I did not have that detail in front of me.
Yep.
Trying
now
to get
is Channing Tatum in any of these movies?
No, thank goodness. Although a gigantic Channing Tatum would be horrifying.
He was the guy in the rubber suit.
How about Prophecy from 1979? What giant animal came across as ridiculous in that movie?
Mothman Prophecy.
No, not Mothman's, although that is a movie also. Not from 1979.
Godzilla.
Prophecy.
I haven't seen it.
A giant bear is chasing people through the woods.
Aren't they giant already?
An even gianter bear.
Gianter.
Then the spinoff was Grizzly Adams.
Let me try one more just for fun. Possibly the worst horror movie ever made. Night of the Lepus, 1972.
Lepists?
L-E-P-U-S. Night of the Lepus. Based on a novel.
Lupus.
Lepus.
Lepus.
In French.
Okay.
Yes, I thought it might be lupus too,
it's
but
lupus.
It is listed on IMDb as spelled L-E-P-U-S. So you may be thinking of the same movie.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Godzilla.
Godzilla is a good guess, although wrong in every way.
Is it a wolf?
It is not a wolf.
It's not a flying squirrel.
Because lupus would mean wolf, of
right,
course.
Right.
But lepus refers to
moose.
A different
a moose?
Mammal.
Or jackalope?
No moose. Well, there is a moose lodge in one scene. I possibly just made that up, but...
Okay.
Night of the Lepus. And that,
deer. Giant
that,
deer.
No.
No.
It does,
mother-in-law.
Lepus does refer to... Now, the son-in-laws lepus away from their mother-in-laws.
Suicidal teenagers.
Although, this animal is known for its... jumping ability.
Kangaroos.
Not kangaroo, although that would be horrifying.
The Leaper Monkey.
Night of the Lepus is 1972, straight up serious horror movie about giant rabbits.
Oh, rabbits.
If you have not seen giant this rabbits. Movie and want to see the worst movie ever made, what they do is they have reaction shots of people being attacked. So it's just a person going, ah, and then they cross-cut it with close-ups of rabbits' teeth, like rabbits going, nyah.
I have actually been bit by a rabbit.
Well, rabbits serious. Are vicious little buggers, aren't they?
They are vicious.
That was the
buggers.
Worst year of Easter we ever had.
They can cover a surprising amount of ground in a short amount of time.
We have time for one more question, and I think Jeff Miller with the beard, as I look in your direction, I think you may have an unfair advantage with this question. Where does the word creepy come from?
Every girl I've ever met. Sorry.
Oh, so Harry Jeff has the unfair advantage. Where does the word, why do we refer to off-putting people such as Jeff Fry as creepy? Why are those women calling him creepy? Where does that slang originate? Any thoughts? How far back does it go?
Radiohead?
Back to the Future?
It goes back even further than Radiohead. Okay. Of course, there is the word creep, as in creatures that crawl along the ground, and that word is biblical. There are, in ancient Hebrew, there is words that basically mean creep, referring to animals that crawl on the ground. Animals that crawl on the ground sometimes make people feel unnerved, which is kind of what creepy means, like your skin crawling or bad feeling. But where does the word creepy, you know, meaning that modern sense of a creep or a creepy person, come from? Any ideas how far back or?
Serpent Mound.
How long ago?
Snakes, maybe worms or night crawlers or something like that.
Well, Serpent Mound is, of course, a famous historical site in Ohio,
right.
Thousands of years old, and is actually older than the use of the word creepy to describe Jeff over here. Well, the word creep was used in similar ways, such as a despicable person, in a creeping fellow, a sneak. Been used not only in English, but the German equivalent. And it starts to appear in English in the 1870s and becomes common in U.S. slang in the 1930s to refer to somebody as a sneaking creep or a creeping fellow.
Like Nietzsche?
I don't know that Nietzsche had much to do with that, but
okay.
I can imagine people referring to him as creepy. A creepy creep. How about you? Any other meanings or ideas about the word creep or creepy people?
When, I'm sorry, when did it become common? In
early 1900 American slang, say by the 30s, to refer to a sneaky person, like a thief or someone you didn't trust.
I think like gangsters,
right.
Alcohol, the Prohibition.
Lon Chaney films.
Lon Chaney films. Well, Lon Chaney films, 1940s, Wolfman,
no.
41.
Lon
Chaney Sr.,
yes,
got, you got me there.
I think Wizard
well
of
called.
Oz, creepy.
Yes, 1940s, 1930-something.
Yeah.
Nixon, creepy.
Well, the committee to re-elect the president, of course, was for President Nixon. Jeff, you know any creeps?
My dad's kind of a creep.
Creepy guy.
Yeah.
Creepy.
This whole thing's creepy.
It is a little, I'm just going to listen to this at home by myself naked. So
okay,
is that creepy at all?
I think that's pretty common with Cleveland people.
Yes. Creepy with that kind of sexual connotation, like a stalker or a pedophile, is a little more modern from the 70s and 80s.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
I think I've seen your face on a poster somewhere.
Have you seen this child?
All right. Well, we've come to the end of the class, so it's time for me to calculate your grades and determine who's going to win today's classroom prize, the Golden Banana. But I'd like to give every student a chance for some extra credit by going around the room and giving you one more chance to try to impress your teacher. Sitting across from me, Jeff Miller, anything you'd like to say on your own behalf? Anything impressive you got?
Oh, Purdue's looking pretty good right now.
You lose minus 10 points for mentioning sports in my classroom.
And if he's watching a game from 2002.
Are you a... way to stay current ETs. Okay. How about you, Jeff Fry? Anything you want to say on your own behalf before I calculate the final grades?
Being from a Muggle family, I'll give you $50 to win this whole thing.
Bribery and brown nosing. Classic American tradition. How about you, Matt Tyson?
I will do everything in my power to get you a job at Savannah College of Art and Design. Get you out of Lake Erie College.
Well, you get bonus points for continually ripping on Lake Erie College.
Oh, thank you.
But today's golden banana must go to the hairy one, Jeff Fry.
Thank you.
So that just leaves me, the professor, Dr. Jerry Jaffe, to thank my students. Thank you all for coming to today's class.
Thank you.
Jeff, and Matt.
Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.